You are listening to Live with Thrive, an interactive conversation with host Stephanie Hale of Thrive in Southern New Mexico. Stephanie will be showcasing nonprofit agencies and business leaders that help support the community through Thrive, as well as discussing upcoming events and local news. Catch the Live with Thrive show every second Tuesday of the month on KHII Active Radio, 88.9 Cloudcroft, 100.5 FM Alamogordo, and 102.3 Ruidoso.
Well, good morning. Happy Taco Tuesday. This is Stephanie with Thrive in Southern New Mexico, and you are now listening to Live with Thrive, our very own radio show. And today I'm so excited. We have some amazing agencies in here today. First off, we have Kids Inc. Family Advocacy Center, Ms. Cambry Seiling, Executive Director.
Good morning. Good morning.
Thank you for being here. Thank you for being here. And then we also have the lovely Ashley Hudson of Service Heart CASA, which is Court Appointed Special Advocates. Good morning, Ashley.
Good morning.
Thank you, guys. Thank you so much for being here. And Cambry, please introduce our other guest here today.
I brought along Bridget Jones. Today is her first day working with Kids Inc., and she is our new family advocate and community outreach coordinator. So I brought her along to kind of hear
welcome,
a little bit more
Ms. Jones. Thank you so much for being here as well. And if you feel like you want to jump in, please jump in. We're not shy here at all. So thank you all again for being here, and thanks everyone for listening. I mentioned it's Taco Tuesday. I think it's because I'm hungry. and, you know, I could eat taco Wednesdays and Thursdays and Fridays.
Yes.
So let's just jump right in. First, I want to talk about the fact that you, both of your agencies are Thrive funded. So I would like to ask you both what is the best way to word that? How important is the community funds that come through Thrive for your Thrive funded programs, Ashley?
So the Thrive funds are definitely important to our agency. We all of our funding that we receive is through various grants. So every little bit that we have is very important. We work directly with foster children, and so everything that we receive goes right back to them. We have volunteers in our agency, so thankfully, you know, we're able to not have to worry so much about necessarily having to pay them, but we're able to provide them with various services. We've paid for camps. We've paid for the kid needed a laptop. We've had kids that needed shoes and coats during the winter. So we're able to take any funding that we receive from Thrive and put it right back into our children to ensure that their needs are being met while they're in foster care.
Oh, that's wonderful. Let's back up just a second before we jump to you. Tell everyone a little bit more about what your agency does in the community, for those that may not know.
Okay. So CASA is Court Appointed Special Advocates, and we are an organization that has volunteers that we train them to be advocates for children that are in the foster care system. So they work directly with our children, helping to advocate them and help them navigate through the foster care system. They are there from the time, you know, children are brought into care till the time that they either are reunified with their parents or adopted or aged out. So they are there as a mentor as well as an advocate. You know, some of these kids, you know, they call our volunteers, you know, after a bad day at school because they just need someone to talk to. And our volunteers fight for these kids to make sure that, you know, they're being heard and that their needs are being met.
So let's say a child is in the foster care system and they're staying with a foster parent. Is that advocate still involved with that child, even though they're in a home structure with foster parents and a foster family? Are they still very much involved?
Oh, yes, definitely. Whether they're in a relative foster home with, you know, an aunt or an uncle or a grandparent, or whether it's a foster home, you know, with someone that they're, you know, not familiar with, whether they're in a group home, we have a couple of kids that are in residential treatment centers. Any child that comes into the system is assigned a CASA volunteer.
Okay. That's great. And I don't know that a lot of people are aware that we have that service in this community and Lincoln County,
yes,
as we were just talking about before we started. Ms. Cambry, Same question to you. How important are the Thrive Funds for the programs that are actually funded?
Sure. No, I'm happy to talk about it. So we have two Thrive funded programs. We were lucky enough to get approved for both of our programs. So our first program is our Victim Supplies and Resource Closet. And that really helps children and families that we see at the Child Advocacy Center with clothing, toiletries, school supplies, sometimes food.
All those necessities
that sometimes they're just not getting. And we don't have additional funding for that particular program. It's kind of one of those, it started out as a wish, started out with some wish list funds to actually get like the actual plastic bins and the shelving and things like that. So our local Alamogordo Rotary Club was fantastic with helping provide us with the money to start with the shelving. And then we kind of went from there. And so we've exhausted all of our initial wish list funds. And so our Thrive funding is essential for us to be able to maintain that particular program.
Do you take donations of items?
We do.
Okay.
We do. Particularly, like I said, backpacks, blankets, school supplies, toiletries. Kids get so excited when they get to pick out their own toiletries, yeah, their own backpack, you know, basic clothes. It's really hard for us to maintain like a full clothing closet, mm-hmm, just because the variety of sizes and styles, sure, and things like that. But we do, we're obviously new donations are a little bit easier for us.
Right.
We don't turn anything away. We just sometimes have to spend a little bit more time sorting through if they're used donations.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And our second program is our Sunny Days. He is our courthouse facility dog. I didn't bring him today. He's at the office working. Stephanie, you've met Sonny. You've seen him working. You've seen him all over town. So Sonny, he just turned 4. He had a birthday in March. He is a golden doodle. He doesn't realize how big he is.
He thinks he's a little lap dog, doesn't he?
He does. He would love to be on our lap all the time. Sonny is a certified service dog and originally received his training in Texas, had his finished training at an amazing facility in Santa Fe, Assistance Dogs of the West. And he works at our facility. Kids are amazed that he actually is, you know, a staff member of ours, as we call him. And he's really designed to reduce anxiety and reduce stress levels. And children and families that come in that are going through some pretty significant traumas, he works with them just to really reduce that anxiety. He works with them throughout the facility. He can go to court with them if that's necessary. He can go to medical exams if that would be helpful. He can do just about anything that we need him to do. And we also had kind of some wish list, you know, initial funding for him. But of course, he wants to continue to eat and get groomed and go to the vet and all of those things. And so the Thrive funding is critical for us to be able to maintain really what he needs so we can keep him healthy and happy so that he can work with the kids at our facility.
Oh, that's great. Now, do your agencies often work together?
So
because
really,
of the what you do and your volunteers?
We really see, we work with the same children, mm-hmm, but at different times.
Yes. Through the process.
Right.
Okay.
So Kids Inc. is involved with those kids at the very beginning of an investigation, child abuse or neglect. We provide those forensic interviews of those children. We provide family advocacy services, crisis counseling services, and work hand-in-hand with law enforcement, CYFD, the district attorney's office, at the very beginning of those investigations. We also can interview children if they're witness to a violent crime. And so a lot of what we talk about is kind of sombering.
Sure.
And so it's really great for me to be able to talk about Sonny, our dog, and our resource closet, because those are kind of some bright lights that we have at the CAC.
Sure.
If children are taken into legal custody, then they move on. So after we're kind of done working with their family, or at least we're just doing some follow-up advocacy with them, that's when CASA would get appointed.
Yes.
and be able to appoint a volunteer for those kids at that point.
Now, I think I read somewhere that there is another facility dog. Is it at the courthouse itself? Somebody had a new dog. Is that all in the same realm of services, right, that both of you are offering for children? Is it for,
sure,
children?
So the district attorney's office has two dogs, actually. They have Rodrigo and Roselle. And they are black labs, and they came from the same facility in Santa Fe, Assistance Dogs of the West. They're also courthouse facility dogs, which is different than a therapy dog. It's a higher level of training, really, than a therapy dog, and a higher level of service that can be provided. So the district attorney's dogs work with a lot of children, but they're available for all victims that come through the district attorney's office.
Okay.
And then the dog that you're talking about that's new to the area is with COPE.
Okay.
And so brand new that he'll be working, Jetty, and he'll be working. So for our community to have...
Is this also another victim?
It's another facility dog that works with victims at COPE.
That's great.
Yeah. So for our community to have four courthouse facility dogs...
That's amazing.
...is amazing. There's only... Roswell has a few, and I think they have a dog at the Hobbs DA's office, but there aren't any other communities that have this level of facility dogs working in their community.
That shows you that obviously it's a proven working thing.
Yes.
I mean, it's been proven to work, right? Or we wouldn't continue to help our community. And I'm telling you, I mean, I know Alamogordo or Otero County isn't the only place that has... issues and challenges within our societies, in our pockets of domestic violence and abuse and things like that. So it's really great to have this. I mean, how awesome that COPE now, they have Thrive funded programs as well. And I know everybody in this community, all of our agencies are intertwined and working together somehow. So, you know, it's just really great that I remember reading on Facebook, I want to say, some social media outlet where I saw a dog and I couldn't remember where it was, and I had no idea that the courthouse had two already. Mm-hmm. So four in the community, that's great.
It just really shows like the active efforts that our community is making to assist victims. I think it's phenomenal because when you hear that there's no other, you know, place in our state that, you know, has that many dogs, you know, it just really shows that we're putting those people first. We're putting victims first and trying to ensure that their needs are being met as much as possible.
Now, I'm sure you guys have gotten this next question a lot, especially in the last year. But because of our global crises, the pandemic, share with us what has been happening within your respective agencies. For example, have you seen cases go up? Have you seen more children come through the system or more cases arise? Tell us about that.
So I know on my end, numbers have declined of cases coming in, and I think a lot of that was due to children being at home. They weren't in school. I know that a lot of times cases come through because teachers or doctors are, you know, they're making those calls to Sky so that, you know, these cases can be checked out. So we've seen our case numbers decline. And in regards to, you know, how we've adapted, we're still primarily working from home. Meetings, court hearings, everything's being done through Zoom or Google Meets. And we're not conducting visits in person currently. Everything is being done virtually. So it's definitely been a shift. We've had, you know, thankfully we haven't really had a drop in our volunteer numbers. So people have been staying on and helping out as much as possible. We've actually taken on a couple of new ones during this pandemic, because we were able to train them completely virtually. So that was definitely a big benefit. We, when volunteers come on, they go, you know, they do an official swearing in with the judge, with Judge Schneider. And she actually, you know, was able to set it up on Google Meets and everything. So we were able to do the entire process virtually. So I mean, it was a struggle at first, but we've kind of all adapted. I mean, I know our volunteers are ready to go and hug their kids.
Sure.
Because, you know, that's, you know, they bond with these children and they build those relationships. And, you know, it's kind of hard for them to, you know, not be able to go and do that and go visit with them and go play games with them and you know, go have lunch and things like that. But I mean, thankfully, you know, we're still ensuring that everyone's receiving the services that they need.
That's great. Yeah. That's great. It's been tough for everybody.
Oh, yeah.
You know, trying to adapt to this whole new way of living. And how about Kids Inc? And you can talk about even not only Sunny and the supplies, but other other areas of your agency.
Sure. So before I forget, I want to let you know that April is Child Abuse Awareness Month. And so there, sometimes it's a little difficult for us to kind of plan activities sure. and events and things like that. You may have seen in the past where there have been blue pinwheels in the lawn of the courthouse, mm-hmm. and they were gracious enough to let us put those in there.
So folks, if you drive down the center of Alamogordo, 10th in New York, and you see every year those pinwheels, that's what it's for.
Yeah. And we were not able to do that this year. We weren't able to get it together next year just because of COVID mm-hmm. and the restrictions. But those pinwheels have represented one pinwheel for each child that was interviewed at Kids Inc. for that particular year. And so wow. That was a way for us to kind of bring it together.
I recall seeing a lot yeah. of them.
Yeah. So as far as our numbers for COVID time, our numbers have also declined, and this is something that we talk about with other CACs across the state. There are just a couple of agencies whose numbers kind of maintained, but a lot of the agencies saw a decrease in numbers. And that's not really what we expected originally, but that is the trend that they're seeing even nationwide, down tens of thousands of cases. And the first reaction that I get from a lot of people that don't understand exactly what it is that we do say, oh, that's great. There's less incidents of child abuse happening. Unfortunately, that's not necessarily the case. It's less incidents of child abuse that are being reported.
Kind of like what Ashley just said, mm-hmm. the teachers and folks aren't seeing.
Exactly.
These kids are staying home and nobody's may know what's yet. Going on, right?
So in New Mexico, everyone is a mandated reporter. So a lot of people think, well, it only has to be teachers or police officers or doctors or something like that. And in New Mexico, everybody is a mandated reporter. So it's kind of that motto of if you see something, say something. You know, mm-hmm. We have some new shirts for Child Abuse Awareness Month that, you know, protecting children is everybody's job. But unfortunately, during COVID, we had less eyes on kids all the way around. They weren't going to their social events. They weren't going to their sporting events. They weren't going to school. They weren't doing those kinds of things. The flip side to that, unfortunately, is that the cases that we were seeing, a lot of them were much more severe. And so although the overall numbers themselves were down, we were having some much more egregious types of cases, physical abuse, sexual abuse, lots of domestic violence in our community, unfortunately, because so many people are just under so much stress. And it's unfortunately that we have kids that are witness to those types of events. So now that kids are back in school, we have seen our numbers come back up a little bit, which is exactly what we expected to happen. We expect that to continue to happen as kids get back into school and around their friends and around their teachers and around all of the staff that's working with them, and they feel more comfortable talking about things that may be happening or things that may have happened. And so we're kind of seeing an increase in some of our numbers. That doesn't mean that we haven't continued to provide services all through COVID. It was just a very careful time for us.
Right.
We would have so many people in the facility for cases, and because we cover all of Lincoln and Otero County, we have people coming from as far down south as Chaparral, as far out as Capitan and Carrizoso and Ruidoso and things like that. And so bringing together people from all over our, you know, the two counties, we were having to be really careful to make sure that we didn't have any COVID spread within our facility. And we haven't, and that's been fantastic.
Right.
And so we're back in the office full time now. There were times that we were, you know, we never stopped providing services. It was just, it looked a little bit different for us.
Sure.
There were still times that we were being called by different agencies and different people that knew that we had our resource closet. And so even though we weren't there full time, they were calling. They couldn't get into the CYFD building to get to get items, or they, you know, didn't have access to other agencies that would normally be providing that kind of stuff. And so our resource closet was a huge benefit to us during COVID time, and has just continued to be even more of a benefit for us.
Good deal. Walk us through Cambry, because I've had the pleasure of being in the same Rotary with you, and I've heard you speak about your agency as a whole, but without being too graphic or telling, if you will. Sure. Walk us through the process that a family would go through from start to finish with your agency.
Sure. So, like I said, everybody in New Mexico is a mandated reporter. So there is a statewide central intake, so SCI, so SCI, when you hear people talk about SCI report, SCI referrals, did you call and make a you know, did you call SCI? There's a 1-800 number to make statewide referrals. And so you can't just come to us, you know, off the street and get a forensic interview.
It has to go through this process.
So our referrals come from law enforcement and or through the SCI referral system. So SCI is run by CYFD, so the Children, Youth, and Families Division.
And anyone can make that report, correct?
Right.
Anyone can call that number.
Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of people that should be making those reports if they see that things are going on with children. They have a particular system of how they screen in cases, how they screen out cases, and there's a lot of bureaucracy, for lack of a better term, on how that happens. We coordinate at Kids Inc. We are the coordinator of the local multidisciplinary team. So what that means is all of the different agencies that work on these particular types of cases. We do case tracking, and so we make sure that we know what's going on with each of our cases.
And you all are all on the same team,
yes,
or on the same page of
and
what's
we
happening.
Right, and we can say, okay, you know, Officer so-and-so was going to do X, Y, and Z. Has that been done? This agency was going to do this. We were going to do this. Whatever the situation might be, we want to make sure that there are no kids falling through the cracks. We want to make sure that there are no cases that are being forgotten or being, you know, pushed into drawers in offices somewhere, because we want to make sure that all of our kids are safe. So we might have a family that presents at our facility at the Child Advocacy Center. Sometimes kids are there with their family if they're non-offending caregivers. Sometimes children are there without family members if the family is not safe for them. And so it just depends on what the allegations are. We have specially trained forensic interviewers that speak with children in an age-appropriate, non-leading type of way that can be legally defensible, mm-hmm, if the case ends up with criminal charges. A lot of them don't end up with criminal charges. It just depends on exactly what's going on. So the child, we have a large family waiting room, very child-friendly. They're able to play and watch movies and get a snack. You would not believe how many children we feed because they come in so hungry. And so we're making sure that their needs are being taken care of. When they are forensically interviewed, they only have to speak to the interviewer. They're not having to speak to a room full of people. So the Child Advocacy Center model is that everybody that's involved in a particular type of case can have access to the information that they need, but that child doesn't have to go to all of those different multiple agencies
and repeat the story
and
over
repeat
and over
their trauma. And that's what it is that's re-traumatization of children. And so they might have to go to CYFD, they might have to go to a medical facility, they might have to go to the police station, they might have to do all of these different things. And each time they're being re-traumatized by telling their story,
sure,
we can alleviate all of that. We can have them interviewed one time. And next to our interview room is an observation room where all of our partner agencies that need that information are watching and listening. And they're able to gather their information. And we have to remember that law enforcement is looking at a case from their lens, mm-hmm, from their particular perspective. But CYFD is looking at a family and what the needs of that family are from their perspective and from their lens. The DA's office is looking at it from a different way. So everybody has their own needs and, you know, what needs to happen in the case or what's going to be best for that family. Our family advocate is fantastic with providing resources to families and providing information about all of the resources that our community does provide. And we have so many people that step up and help out that part of it is fantastic. We can provide crisis counseling, you know, at the time. We can provide Sunny. There's so many different things that we can,
sure,
do. We try to interview a child just one time. We don't want them to have to come back in and talk more about what's going on. Sometimes that happens, but we try to avoid that. And make sure that everybody on the team for that particular case is on the same page and they know exactly what needs to happen next.
Sure. I don't know if this question can be answered, but do you see a trend, if that's even possible, within our area, since you've been with this agency, do you see a trend in the types of cases that you see, maybe more so than another area of the state or even the country? Is there something in our area that's happening more than anything else? And what is, if so, what is that?
I think the best way for me to answer that particular question is to talk about the unique location in where Alamogordo is.
Okay.
And especially because we cover Lincoln and Otero, you have to remember that that includes law enforcement agencies from Alamogordo, the sheriff's office, state police, Tularosa, Cloudcroft, but then we have the military base. And so we do provide forensic interview services and family advocacy in conjunction with their family advocacy program for things that are happening at the base, either on the base or with base families if they're in town. So there's some really, really unique jurisdictional issues going on with the military base. And so we work with their OSI, with their security forces, with the FBI sometimes. Then we have Lincoln County. And so we have as far out as Capitan and Carrizozo and Lincoln County Sheriff's Office and Ruidoso Downs. And so we have multiple agencies there, but we also provide services to the Mescalero Apache Indian Reservation. And so again, we have a very unique jurisdictional issue with cases that either happen on the reservation or off of the reservation, but with Indian members. And so I think probably that you don't see in many other places where we have such this wide jurisdictional coverage. As far as trends of the types of cases that we're seeing, even though our cases, our numbers have kind of fluctuated, and they do a little bit over the years anyway, but with COVID, we definitely know that they have fluctuated. No matter what our total numbers are, we're sitting at between 50 and 60% of the cases that are referred to us are coming in as sexual abuse cases.
Wow.
And so that's not really what our community wants to hear, but it's probably important information for people to understand.
Absolutely, for everybody to know that.
Yeah.
It's very shocking.
And it is. And we interview children as young as 3. And so 3-year-olds sometimes are difficult to speak with. And they don't just have to be able to answer yes or no questions. They have to actually be able to carry on a narrative and provide a narrative. And so we interview as young as 3 all the way up to adulthood. We also interview adults that may be developmentally, cognitively, delayed. So if they are functioning at a much lower age than their biological age, we also still provide services for those family as well. And sometimes those are, they have multi-victimizations if there are some delays. And so it's important that we're taking care of those members of our community as well.
That's amazing. I'm just flabbergasted by that. Like you said, community members don't necessarily want to hear that, mm-hmm. but it's important to share that information. I mean, come on, people.
And I think what's really what's really important is for parents to know what their children are doing online. We've seen such an increase with issues of children being victimized or being groomed, definitely online. Parents, get on your kids' phones, get on their tablets, get on their computers, know what they're doing. Look for software that helps. I don't care what the kids say about you, being in their business. You have to understand the level at which children are being groomed online, and a lot of it is happening through social media apps, Kick and TikTok and some of those other things.
And there are so many new apps that people don't even know. They're coming out every day.
Yeah.
New apps that we don't even know about, and parents probably don't even know about.
Right. We work, there's a statewide, it's called the ICAC, which is the Internet Crimes Against Children Unit. And they work through the Attorney General's office. And you'll have different agencies around the state and around the country that have specific ICAC officers. And so those officers are really working on monitoring what's going online with children.
Sure.
And sometimes, you know, maybe doing undercover operations where they are, you know, pretending to be a 13-year-old girl or something like that.
Sure,
and so
sure.
I bring that up just because I did a conference last week on a case just like that. We did a case study. So please know what your kids are doing online. Keep track of them. And, you know where they are and who they're with and what they're doing, because you wouldn't believe the things that are happening to our kids.
Well, and I can imagine with the large shifts to the online schooling over the past year that, you know, those numbers are probably up a little bit because the kids are on the computers a lot more.
We tell them not to be on the computers all the time.
We've tried to put them in front of a computer. Yeah, exactly. And I mean, you know, they get bored staring, you know, so of course they're going to hop on something not knowing what's going to happen. So yeah, I mean, I definitely agree with Kim. Check on your kids, see what they're doing. You know, because we assume that because they're sitting in front of the computer that they're doing homework, but you never know, you know? I mean,
or playing a game.
Yeah, exactly.
You just don't know, and you can't be hovering over your child 24 hours a day. But
And talk to your kids.
Yes.
Talk to your kids about what's going on with them.
Absolutely.
Talk to your kids about their bodies. Talk to them about what's appropriate and what's not appropriate, and talk to them about who in their life is a safe person for them to talk to. We want them to feel safe to be able to, you know, to report if there's something going on that they don't like. I would rather investigate or have investigated, you know, tons of cases where nothing comes of it than miss those cases where something is happening. So talk to your kids.
Sure. Now, Ashley, do you all also provide services in Mescalero?
Yes, we do. Anybody that is on Mescalero, we cover both counties, so that includes Mescalero as well. And so we do have several cases that are children that fall under what's called ICWA, the Indian Child Welfare Act. And so what essentially happens with those children is CYFD works in conjunction with the tribal members to care for those children. So we do take those children on. And what we do as an agency is we try to ensure that our volunteers understand, you know, the cultural background and things like that. If we do have volunteers that are also tribal members, we try to pair them up appropriately with those children, because culture is a big thing, and that's what happens a lot of times, unfortunately, is children begin to lose their culture because there's not always foster homes, you know, that also have tribal members. So, you know, the children are placed with somebody else who's not aware, you know, of you know, their culture and their norms and everything like that. And so that's one thing that we try to do with our volunteers is ensure that they're trained enough that they can help ensure that the kids are you know, receiving, you know, everything that they need. They're still able to participate in, you know, whatever events and things like that, whatever, you know, ensures that they maintain that connection to their culture. We really work hard to ensure that.
Is there a shortage of foster adults, foster families?
Oh, yeah.
And if someone was interested in doing that, yes, I've thought about it a lot.
Talk to me
actually,
afterwards. I'll tell you all about
it. But if someone was interested in pursuing that to volunteer as a foster family or a parent or, you know, just someone to help out in that way, how would they go about doing that?
So if people are interested in being, you know, working to become a licensed foster home, that takes place through CYFD. So you can check out their website. They have all the information. You can actually, I believe, put in like a contact. But there is a huge shortage. So unfortunately, what's happening a lot is we're seeing kids from our counties being placed elsewhere in the state, which means they're moving their schools, which means that visitations with parents is a lot harder. You know, so they're losing a part of themselves. They've already been taken out of their home, but now they're being taken out of their community.
Their whole world is changing.
Yes.
And how stressful is that?
It's, yeah. I mean, and it's rough. It's very rough because even with us, with our volunteers, it's hard for us to assign a volunteer to a kid that lives in Rio Rancho. But we try to still ensure that, you know, they have that person there for them. So, if you're interested in being a foster family, definitely contact CYFD. They are, and a lot of times right now what they're doing is they're kind of working to fast track foster homes because there's such a shortage.
Sure. Okay.
Stephanie, I was a foster parent for many years. And when my boys were younger, and it was probably some of the hardest work that I've ever done. But I will tell you, it was some of the most rewarding work that I've ever done. So there is a huge shortage of foster families in Otero and Lincoln both. There are guidelines and classes and trainings and, you know, all of those kinds of things. But then there you have a little bit of control over, how many children are in your home and the types of requirements that might come along with a particular type of case. And I mean, you get your own social worker, you know, the child gets their social worker and then the family gets one as well. So they're there to help you through that. But it's heartbreaking when we're working with families. And if we know that children are going to be taken into custody, that there aren't any homes here. And so not only, like Ashley said, not only are they being pulled from their home, but now they're being pulled from their sporting events, their school, yes, their neighborhood, and, you know, things like that, and being put into another community. Everybody wants cute little babies and things like that, but sometimes we have teenagers that probably need placements more than anyone.
Sure.
And when we have kiddos that have to be sent to group homes in Albuquerque and Santa Fe, that's heartbreaking because they're going through enough. You know, being a teenager is hard just in and of itself. And then having, you know, events happen in your life where you've been removed from your home, that's tough. And then you're being placed in a group home, you know, in Albuquerque or Santa Fe. That is potentially long-term, you know, damage to these kids.
Absolutely. And so, no matter what age, really, I mean.
Yeah, if, you know, and sibling groups is so hard when you have sibling groups that you try not to separate the siblings. And sometimes that's really tough as well. When you have a licensed home that can only take, you know, two or three kids and you've got a sibling group of five, you know, how do you separate that out? How do you tell the kids who doesn't get to stay with their big brother or whatever the situation is? So if anybody has thought about being a foster, I mean, we're not here to necessarily talk about that, but I will always say you need to be a foster parent and you need to be a substitute teacher. Those are places that...
Those are the important ones, yeah, to help our youth, because mm-hmm. these kids are going to be running the country, you know, before our lifetimes are over. So, you know, we want to make sure that we take care of them in any way. And I just thought it was important to, you know, because you guys are working with this specific population mm-hmm. and you're seeing it more than the average Joe on the street does, it's mm-hmm. it's important to open that information up to everybody and start talking about it. And maybe someone that's listening, maybe I want to be a foster or a volunteer with you all, or somehow get involved to help mm-hmm. these kids. I mean, it's so important.
Yes, definitely. And I would say if people aren't, you know, if maybe becoming a foster parent is a little too much right now, you can always become a volunteer with CASA. We work directly with the children. We train everyone. And it's, you know, it's another really important role in the life of a case, you know, and these children, you know, they really look up to the volunteers. And the judges even look to us a lot, too. The judges heavily rely on us to bring in those reports and to give them, you know, the rundown of exactly what's going on and to fight for these children. So if the idea of becoming a foster parent, you know, just isn't in the cards right now, we have a lot of actually foster parents that have started out as CASA volunteers and then they decided, hey, you know what? I want to take the next step. I'm going to become a foster parent. And they'll start the licensing process with CYFD, and it's absolutely wonderful to hear.
How intense and how long does it take for one to go through all the training and whatnot to become a volunteer for CASA?
So right now, our training is roughly 30 hours, but it is a self-paced online training. So we have people that, you know, work full time, or we have some people, you know, that are retired and have a little bit more time on their hands. It's self-paced. So there's no deadline on when it needs to be done. And you can do it as quickly as you'd like, or if you need a little bit of extra time, some people will do it in the evenings or on the weekends. And it takes you through, I mean, it's honestly, National CASA created an amazing training program, and you know, it definitely gives our volunteers an entire overview of our process.
Great.
And then even after they're done training, you know, we work side by side with them, you know, for as long as they need us. We're always there. I have two volunteer coordinators on my staff that are there for our volunteers. So anytime they have questions or they need assistance with anything, they can call them, and they can call me as well. They know that. So that, you know, they always know that there's somebody there to help them with that. You know, because some days are hard. Sometimes there's things that pop up that are a little, you know, this is different. Mm-hmm. And so they know that they have someone else that they can call to assist them. But yeah, our training is a nice process, because it's nothing, you know, too overbearing, and it's self-paced. That's the one big key thing, is it's a self-paced training for them.
That's really great. You made me think of something when you just said that, that all of these agencies, yours are running on such small staff.
Yes.
I mean, how many staff members do you have? Three?
Yeah,
four?
It's me and two other people.
And Cambry, you have four?
Yeah, there's four of us total. I mean, plus our bringing on our crisis counselor.
Right. I mean, you have to understand that you two and others like you wear so many hats.
Yes.
To make these organizations run, to help them continue and to keep those relationships with other agencies going. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a lot. It's a lot of work. And people think, oh, it's a nonprofit. You know, I mean, we've really delved deep into both agencies today. But and I'm sorry, we got a little off track. But it's important information, I think, and I want to share it with everybody. But at the same time, it's important for the community to know that, man, you guys rock. You're wearing so many hats and doing so many things, and you have so many balls in the air.
Yes.
Just making it work. And you're both passionate about what it is that you're doing. And I think that's super important.
Thank you.
You're welcome. So on a lighter note, you both have been with your agencies for a little while now. So tell us where you see these programs going into the future. What would you like to see? How would you like to see your program going in, say, the next 5 years? I mean, obviously, we don't want to have these types of cases. But unfortunately, I hate to say it, but the fact of the matter is they're probably not going to go away.
Very true.
We talk about, you know, how great it would be if we could work ourselves out of a job, if we could get...
Wouldn't that be great?
It would, if we didn't have to have these types of agencies exist. But unfortunately...
It's always going to be there.
It's always going to be there. There have been these types of cases that have been happening for a very long time. They're going to continue. We are trying to expand and do some more community outreach. And unfortunately, as ironic as it is, there is lots of funding for all of the reactive type services that, you know, an agency might need to provide, for all of the things that we provide now. But there's very little funding for preventative type of services. That's just so ironic that there's not more prevention funding that's available. And so we would, you know, love to be able to reach out more. We've gotten some new flyers and some new bookmarks and things like that made that we're going to be able to get out at the wellness fair that's happening this Saturday.
You have to bring some to the Thrive office.
Yes,
as well.
We'll drop some off. We've got some bookmarks. We have a library program that we've started for kids at the CAC where we want all of our kids to be able to leave with, you know, not only the essentials that they need, the toiletries and the socks and the underwear and things like that, but if we can get them, you know, a book, and we have a bookmark that talks about it's okay, you know, to tell.
That's
it's
great.
Okay to talk about what's going on and find a safe person to talk to. But these cases aren't going to go away. And so the more we can be involved as a community to not only report what we see, but then when we have families that may be struggling, to help figure out how to provide them the resources, the training, the education to be able to take care of their children. Children need to be with their families. Mm-hmm. Research shows that they do better when they're with their family. And just because a child has been abused or neglected doesn't mean that they don't love their family members. And there's a lot of interesting research that goes, you know, behind that about, you know, children may have been abused, but that's still their mom. That's still their dad. Sure. That's, you know, still
that's
their siblings. That's
who they're comfortable with.
Right. And so the more support that can be provided for families, they have to understand if there's an issue and they've done something wrong, they have to understand what that is, but figure out what it is that they need to be able to correct those, you know, things. And so as a community, if we can help provide those, you know, resources, it's just really tough when all of the funding and all of the push is for all of the reactive type services, as opposed to being, you know, proactive and being on the front end of things.
Yeah. How about you?
I would definitely agree with Cambry on the reactive services. There is not enough preventative services out there because they're not funded. And so as far as my program goes, that's another thing. You know, in the next 5 years, I would love for us to be a part of is more in-home services prior to children being removed, us being able to go in and, you know, and provide those advocacy services and provide, you know,
it's almost like you want to help it before it becomes an issue.
Yes, definitely. Sure. Definitely. But, you know, a lot of the problem that we see right now is, you know, we can't touch cases until they become legal cases, which mean a child's been removed. Right. So we can't even do anything to assist them until that point, until, you know, you've reached that point of no return, essentially. You know, they've been removed. They're now in foster mm-hmm. care. And so then we can do whatever we can to help provide services for them. But I know both of us would love to be able to do something before it gets to that point. I mean, Cambry's definitely more involved in the before, you know, but I know that, you know, we'd like to even expand more.
Sure.
And even, you know, the children that do come into care, because it's going to happen. They're, you know, there really is no way at some, you know, in some cases to avoid it. It's just being able to provide more. Right now, we've already expanded what it is we're offering as far as, you know, we have started building, you know, we're starting to build a little clothing closet because a lot of times, you know, we hear these kids, they come into care with, you know, the clothes on their back. They don't get a chance to grab, you know, a bag of items and whatnot. And mm-hmm. I'm very thankful, you know, to Cambry and her group for being able to, you know, provide them with the backpacks and things like that, because we have had a couple of kids that are like, oh yeah, I have my bag, you know, that I got from Kids Inc. And so we're continuing to build our, I guess, stockpile of resources as well. We received a donation of laptops for children when, you know, after the pandemic started, a lot of these kids didn't have laptops or access, you know, to the internet. So we've been working to provide, you know, some of these children with things like that. We want to keep those types of things. Another thing we also want to work on in the next 5 years is getting like kind of a kickstart for children that are aging out of care. Mm-hmm. A lot of times these children are aging out of care and they don't have anything, you know, they don't have much direction. They don't know what they want to do. They don't know where they're going to go. And so we want to help set them up on a good path so that they can continue to be successful. Because unfortunately what happens a lot is when these children leave care and they don't have any guidance, they start to come into, you know, they end up in jail or on the streets and things like that. You hear those stories and it's heartbreaking.
It is.
Because the system failed them. Mm-hmm. The system didn't set them up properly because they didn't have, you know, a parent that was there to help get them ready, you know, for applying for jobs or to go to college or whatever it is that they want to do. So they don't have any guidance or direction. And so we want to help with that, you know, ultimately and provide some, you know, services or anything that we can to help get them ready for that next big step in their life.
Sure. Sure. That's great. I hope that others that are listening have the same kind of passion and want to do something to help at the beginning or to prevent the these crises that keep inevitably happening. Yes. And it just, again, blows my mind. If someone wanted to contact you to become a volunteer, how do they reach you?
They can definitely give us a call. Our number is 575-652-1719. They can also reach us on Facebook. We have a Facebook page under Service Heart CASA. They can send us a message, and we'll be more than happy to help get them started. We have an application process that we go through, and we can give them a good rundown of how our program works. And one thing a lot of people ask in regards to being a volunteer is, how much time does it take out of their month? Out of, you know, how much time are they going to spend? Our volunteers on average spend anywhere from 3 to 8 hours a month working their case.
That's
so
nothing.
I mean, that's, you know, that's...
Most people are on Facebook. Yeah,
exactly.
If
exactly.
Not more.
So it's not a huge time commitment. And it's just very, very rewarding to see, you know, when you get a kid who successfully reunites with their family and you know that you had a part in that. And also, a lot of these times, there's kids that go back home, and they still maintain contact with their CASA because, sure, you know, that's a person that's now become someone, an important person in their life. I've got volunteers that, you know, the kids have been home for 3-4 years, and, you know, that CASA still gets called for birthday parties and things like that. They've become a part of that family. Mm-hmm. And so it's definitely a rewarding experience. And we train, we have our training. We're right there with you the whole step of the way so that, you know, they have a good understanding of how to go through all of this and be that advocate and be that mentor and be that person, that stable person in these children's lives as they go through the foster care system.
Thank you. That's wonderful information. I appreciate it.
I'm going to get you the number to the foster care licensing.
do you know that number? If someone were to witness or feel the need to report, you mentioned an 800 number for Sky Report, I believe.
Yeah, it's a statewide central intake, and I should know it, but it's a really long number, and
I don't.
But I do have it. So statewide central intake. You can be an anonymous reporter if you choose not to give your name. We encourage people to give their name and contact information for a couple of different reasons. If the investigators, if that happens to be CYFD or law enforcement, if anybody has any additional questions or needs to contact you for additional information, you've provided contact information. You can ask to remain anonymous so that it doesn't flow through to any reporting that somebody might be able to get a hold of. And also, if you provide your contact information, they can let you know. They can't give you details about what happened, but they can at least give you some idea of what happened with a particular referral that you made. So that number is 1-800-797-3260. Okay. I believe it's also pound safe.
Yes.
From a cell phone.
Okay.
I'm glad I remembered that.
Pound S-A-F, like Frank E.
Yes.
Yes.
Safe. Pound safe from a cell phone.
And one thing I would like to add, and this is something that people tell me all the time, why they don't report, is because they're afraid of retaliation. They're afraid that a parent is going to hear that they made
somebody's going to find out that they reported them, and they're going to get
and just, you know, to let people know that information is not given to, you know, the parents or mm-hmm. anything like that. That information remains with CYFD. So please, if you see something, say something.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Thank you guys so much. This has been eye-opening, I'm sure, for a lot of listeners, but I appreciate you both for being here, and thank you for your extreme dedication to what you guys do. And Ms. Jones, it was very nice to meet you. Thank you for being here, and we appreciate the partnership with Thrive in Southern New Mexico. And there, like I mentioned, there's lots of new things happening for this coming year that will hopefully benefit your agencies. And anytime you guys want to come back on, please let me know. And until then. One more thing before we get off the air here. Tell us what you brought today, Ms. Cambry.
So I wish everybody could see this and touch it and hug it and that sort of thing. I told you that I didn't bring Sunny, our dog, physically. He's working at the office. But with our Thrive funding, we were able to obtain some stuffed animals. We always tried to provide, you know, a little toy for kids when they leave and their book and that sort of thing. But we wanted something that was going to be considered a comfort item that was related to Sunny and to his program. And I've searched and searched and wasn't able to find anything within our price range, and was able recently to find this little white stuffed dog that looks just like Sunny, actually, but about an 8-inch version of him instead of the 92-pound version of him. The dog comes with a red collar, which it came that way, and Sunny wears a red collar. We thought that that was fantastic. We had some little dog paw dog tags made and put his name on it, and he wears one on his collar as well.
It's the cutest thing.
And
I'm telling
there
you
is a red paw or a red heart on the bottom of his paw that flashes. We just got these in. I've been extremely excited
and
about them.
And I think
them.
You have a picture of it on your Facebook page, correct? Do you?
I don't know that we've posted it yet. We just got a bunch of the additional order just came in, and so we were getting ready to start rolling these out. And we really want to be
so
able to
cute.
Provide these to kids that have a chance to work with Sunny. And maybe kind of working on something, I'll give you a heads up, working on something where we can get some of these out into businesses so that we know which businesses are really supporting our efforts.
Sure.
To keep our kids safe.
Well, you keep me posted.
I will do that. Thank you, Stephanie.
Thank you guys again for coming. We appreciate it. Great information. I know folks that were listening, there may be some out there that didn't quite know just what it is. They may have driven by or seen it or heard of it. So this is great. I appreciate you both.
Thank you so much.
My name is Stephanie Hale. I have been your host for the last hour, and I will be back next month. And the second Tuesday of the month at 10 a.m. for some information from other local community partners of our organization. So thanks for listening, and we will be talking to you soon.
You've been listening to the Live with Thrive show with your host, Stephanie Hale of Thrive in Southern New Mexico. Catch the Live with Thrive show the second Tuesday of each month on KHII Active Radio, 88.9 Cloudcroft, 100.5 FM Alamogordo, and 102.3 Ruidoso.